Welcome back to another episode of Corinth in Your Car. It is a good day to be here. I am with Josh and with Adam, as per usual, and we're going to have a good conversation today, starting with a little bit of a check-in. And here's what I'd like to ask you guys, just four different things here, all expressing gratitude. So thinking about this last week, I want you to tell me a thing you're grateful for, a person or a group of people you're grateful for, a memory that you're grateful for, and then an upcoming opportunity that you are grateful for. So one of you jump in and take it away for us.
First of all, dynamite intro there, Luke. Great job.
Appreciate it.
That was, yeah. It wasn't hot or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no. We're laughing a little bit too much today. A little bit hard to focus in and get my radio voice ready for.
Welcome to the 2 hour long edition of Corinth.
We could go 2 hours today.
Thing I'm grateful for is Fake Fall. Mm-hmm. I always enjoy these couple of days here that it's just like, all right, it's not 103 degrees, so that's good.
Till actual Labor Day when it's back in the 90s, mid-90s or something.
Yeah, like I said,
it'll be good.
Any respite we can get, we're good for that. Mm-hmm. Person I'm grateful for, since I'm going first, I'll just jump in. I'm just grateful for my wife, always grateful for my wife, just love her to death. Memory I am grateful for... I'm getting too old to have a whole lot of memories to actually remember.
I thought it was supposed to be that the older you get, the more you have.
You do, but you just don't remember.
You forget all the memories that you have.
Therefore, they are not memories.
They are forgotten memories.
They're occasional recollections.
Yeah, occasional recollections.
You should write them down.
Yeah, I do. And I don't have them in front of me. So, memory I'm grateful for. I don't know, man, but I'll tell you an upcoming opportunity I'm grateful for. So, my brother AJ and I have tickets for the October 12th Thursday night Broncos Chiefs game Kansas City.
Let's go.
So
I was exploring tickets for that one myself.
Yeah, so yeah. My brother used to preach at a church in Kansas, and so he was able to reach out to somebody because we were looking at SeatGeek and so we've learned that whenever we want to do these things, we need to pull the trigger earlier. Okay? Mm-hmm. So that's a lesson for everybody. Don't wait.
Right.
Tickets aren't going to get cheaper, they're going to get more expensive.
Yep.
And so we were looking at SeatGeek and stuff, and it's like, good grief, we're going to be sitting at the top, and it's going to cost this much money. He's like, hey, let me reach out to somebody. And so at his church in Cherryville, got somebody that has season tickets to the Chiefs, can't go to weeknight games. And so we're going to be down in the lower bowl, 22 rows off the field.
Sweet.
For the same price that we were going to have to pay to be top
Amazing.
Of the bowl.
That's awesome.
So
that's
I'm looking great. Forward to that.
That's going to be great. It might be a little cold, too.
No, October in
Kansas October,
City?
No.
Not
yeah.
too bad.
It's going to be
It won't be too bad. It'll be
glorious.
Holy fall.
Yeah.
Glorious.
60 degrees.
It will not be fake fall.
Yeah.
Thursday night football game. Games are super fun. I've been to two Chiefs games, and one of them was a Thursday night game. It was fun, except for the result.
We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah. No, it's okay. We've won two Super Bowls since then.
That's right.
So it's okay. Josh, take it away. We'll run through those four things. Talk to us a little bit about what you're grateful for.
Last week I said I was getting into the charcoal grill, so I might as well say I'm grateful for the smoked wings that we did last weekend. They were phenomenal. They were all gone. None of them remained after we made them. So
did they get crispy?
No, I need to get them. I need to figure out how to get them crispier. I even used duck fat.
Okay, so some people say tossing them in. I think
it's cornstarch you can do too.
That or I think even baking soda. It's either baking soda or powder. One of those two.
Okay. Anyway, it's fun to experiment and try new things.
Bad boys up, man.
I'm grateful for my neighbors. I am driving his vehicle right now. Mine is in the shop with getting new tires. So anyway, a memory. I'm grateful for Jerry Rice signing my hat when I was 8 years old.
Cool.
That was fun.
Yeah.
And upcoming, I'm running a 5K next weekend. So
it's
going to be fun to get back into that game. It's been a while.
Which I was going to say, when was the last time you ran a 5K?
Probably last spring, maybe, like early spring, or last fall, perhaps. It might have even been last fall. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, which one are you running in?
It's the Fuzz Run in Covington. Mm-hmm. So it benefits the police department, and it's going to be fun.
What time do you usually post?
Like, what's my finish line time?
Yeah.
I mean, when I really trained, I actually got below 20 minutes. I do not expect to do that. Probably 24 or hopefully lower, but 24 probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Cool. I'll run through these real quick. A thing I'm grateful for is a book not necessarily any book in particular, but I am finally back into the rhythm of life where
right.
I'm reading a little bit every day. And so the first one I picked up for kind of this season was the one you guys have already read. It's the 16 Laws of Communication. So
I'm not through it yet.
I'm just grateful to be reading a book again. So that's nice.
It's good.
A person or a group of people I'm grateful for. Of course, my wife. Yes. But I will also throw out the 7th grade girls at Corinth and the 8th grade girls at Corinth, who over the last couple of Wednesday nights have served the high school students dinner, which was super cool to watch. A memory.
So can I interrupt real quick?
Yeah.
Bree Mixon mm-hmm. was the leader last night that made those sandwiches.
Yep.
And so she came to class that I was teaching in Founders Hall right after that. And the timing was perfect because she was in the hallway when I started the prayer, like to start the class. I ended the prayer and I said, all right, before we get jumping in on this video, does anyone need a pen, a paper? And then she pipes in and says, or a sandwich? She has this whole tray of sandwiches that are still available. I didn't even know
That's
she was
hilarious.
There. Yeah, it was great.
That's funny.
It was great.
Yeah. So did anybody take her up on it?
Yeah. Perry Acuff ate a turkey sandwich.
Classic.
Yeah.
Love it. Cool. Memory. I didn't really think about the questions that I'm asking down. So I'm struggling with a memory myself. But I'll just...
But you don't get to blame age.
Yeah, I know. I'll throw out... It's college football starts tonight, right? So as we're recording. So I'll throw out watching Vince Young score a touchdown in the national championship game to beat USC with my brother Clark on TV. That was fun.
All right.
Cool. And upcoming opportunity. I'm out this weekend going back to the Redneck Riviera.
Nice.
So that's one thing to, you know, I learned about it last time, but the thing about it is that regardless of how you feel about it, it seems right. to suck you
so
back in.
So question, do you have enough sunscreen?
Well, we haven't gotten sunscreen yet, but we will.
You go to Sam's for that?
We should. Yeah, getting
Isn't,
a bowl
back. Hurricane Ida or whatever it's...
I don't think it's going to be...
An issue for
PCB. You know, I'll be bummed if it is because yeah. I'm not much of a like beach guy. Like I'll do the beach, but like I think I've said it before. Like whenever everybody gets to be an adult, man, they just it's the beach. I'm just gonna sit and read a book, and sleep, and take a nap. I'm like, no, that's what you do at home. What you do at the beach is build sandcastles and go super deep in the ocean and throw the frisbee and all that sort of stuff. So. I'm bringing my discs and my golf clubs. I will probably be playing both versions of golf.
All right.
It'll be fun. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Faith Under Fire is our new series. Josh, you confessed at the beginning of your sermon yesterday that you are a pyromaniac.
Like setting things on fire.
You like setting things on fire. Adam, how do you feel about fire?
It's fun.
Amen.
It is fun. Yeah. You know, whether it's firing up a grill. Now I'll tell you so Jen really loves fire. And so she loves the fireplace and loves any opportunity she can to throw a few logs in there and light it up. So thankfully she hasn't done it this summer cause it'd been a little warm.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I love the fire too. Bonfires,
fake,
s'mores.
Fake fall, chance to.
Yeah. It's probably still a little toasty.
Yeah.
Still a little too warm. Yeah. But yeah, I
don't like bonfires.
No, you don't.
No.
Like roasting s'mores and
that's fine. Whatever.
Little hot dogs on the end of a stick or something like that.
I'd rather throw them on a grill.
See, 9 times out of 10, amen. Yes, absolutely. But there's something about cooking a hot dog over an open fire.
You guys can do it.
Okay, cool.
Go for it.
Have you ever tried roasting Starburst?
The thing about the roasting over a fire is if you have the right people around you. Sitting around a fire with people is that's where it's
that's
at.
What you want. Yeah. Dude, I've introduced you to this.
The Starburst?
Roasting a Starburst.
It was better than I anticipated.
You guys should
try it.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't knock it.
Try it. It is actually pretty good. It's like gooey and melty in your mouth.
Yeah.
It's
Hey, while we're on this, fun. Try saltines on top of your vanilla ice cream as well. That's good.
All right. You guys just need
I don't know about that.
Sweet and salty.
We're
I did it yesterday.
Yeah. Fire is fun.
Back to our
cool.
food takes. Yeah.
Fire is fun. Fire is cool. That's kind of the best thing about it. But the worst thing about it is whenever you're in it. It's fun to enjoy from a distance, but you don't want to be in it. And so, Adam, why don't you give us a quick little blurb once again about this series that we are jumping into. And then, Josh, we will let you take it away for the recap of part one that you preached yesterday.
Yeah, so we're spending some time in the letter of 1 Peter and talking about the idea of suffering, because it's a big part of this, of 1 and 2 Peter, really. And whenever we face pain, whenever we face difficulty, a lot of people just kind of crumble. And Peter is saying, hey, don't do that. Let it be something that refines you, makes you better. You know, you have a living hope and those things. And so in our culture, it feels like there are more opportunities for Christians to suffer than there have been recently.
Yeah.
I mean,
sure.
I would call them opinions, but I don't even know that they're necessarily opinions, but just for beliefs that we hold. And so as we are moving into this post-Christian culture, we have to be ready to stand for what really matters. I think that's what Peter's encouraging us all to do.
Yeah, love it. So Josh, take us away with your recap of what you preached to us yesterday as we started talking about faith under the fire.
Sure, that's really, you know, what Adam said. I think 1 Peter is going to be more and more Christians' favorite books, favorite book of the Bible here in America. It's interesting when you talk to or you hear stories about Christians in persecuted countries, 1 Peter is like their manual that they go to. Mm. And we haven't, like, we like James for its practicality, or Psalms for worship, or Romans for theology. And we haven't really been persecuted nowadays. But there's a transition happening, right? Where culturally it's Christianity is probably less celebrated than ever, I don't know the right word. I mean, there's maybe not full out persecution, people being put to death or things like that, but
right.
There's definitely shame, dishonor,
cancellation,
repute, cancellation, all that stuff. Yeah. So 1 Peter is a great book for us to go to. I was just kind of setting the stage for really Peter starts out the letter with a doxology. It's praise. And so how can worship be our weapon in the midst of the fire? So,
yeah, love that. Adam, as you are kind of reading through what Josh is sharing, what's something that jumps out off the page for you?
I whenever it comes to 3-9 of chapter 1, there is, to me, it's just the living hope. That's always that phrase, as well as I think it's verse 6 there. Just talking about how our suffering refines us. Mm-hmm. And there it is. In all this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you have had to suffer grief and all kinds of trials. These have come so that the proof and genuineness of your faith, greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined, may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus is revealed. To me, it's just it's that constant reminder that what we are going through, if we endure, if we hold strong, if we maintain our faith in the midst of it, results in some really, really powerful things. And so it's just that always reminder just to never give up. You know, it's funny. I think back. So I'm old enough to remember whenever Jim Valvano, remember Jimmy V?
Yeah.
Jimmy V. So he was a North Carolina State basketball coach.
There's still some tribute to him.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a foundation
that
was created. So he was the coach of North Carolina State in 1983 whenever they upset Houston in the Final Four.
Okay.
Back when people cared about college basketball. And anyway, he was diagnosed with cancer, and I think it was at the ESPYs, one of the first ESPYs, they were honoring him, and he gives this speech, basically his tagline was just never give up, never give up, never give up. And to me, that's kind of where Peter is here in what, Josh, year 64 AD, 65?
Early 60s, because Peter, I think, was martyred around 64,
okay,
65,
okay.
So a few years before that.
So a few years before that. So, and persecution is ramping up. It's, it is in this place to where it really is a hostile world towards Christians. And so he's giving the Jimmy V speech to me.
That's good.
Never give up, never give up, never give up.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, I love that. I just, one of the things that was just encouraging to me is, in particular to the way that you started the sermon yesterday, Josh, is really like, we don't, for the first couple of verses, without, if you're just reading it straight up without any background context or anything like that, you actually don't really know all that much about what this audience is going through. Like, mm-hmm. you don't really know about the suffering that they're encountering. So I love that you set it up that way, because mm-hmm. what we're able to see now as you get to verses 3-9 is that for Peter, and what he's encouraging this church to do is he's encouraging them to let praise be the starting point for how they deal with suffering. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's just so key, because often whenever life doesn't go the way that we want it to go, or whenever we begin to feel ostracized or anything, usually that results in frustration and doubt towards God rather than praise of right. his mm-hmm. great activity, which you got to in the application. So I just thought that was super encouraging as a really great reminder. It's like, no, the starting point for how to deal with our suffering is to praise the good Father in heaven. So I appreciated that. Josh, you did lots of work to do that start off series, setting up the background as part of it. So I want to give you and Adam, you as well, the opportunity to talk for a minute about background, historical context of this specific letter for this specific group of Christians. So you mentioned early 60 AD already. There's some persecution going around. So what else is going on kind of around the time this letter is written?
Well, you think just the history of the church, Jesus has, whenever he died, 30-33 AD, shortly after Peter preached the day of Pentecost, thousands came and the church is launched. But Jesus's marching orders were what? You will go and make disciples of all nations, Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. So this is that. And there's not a whole lot of specifics told about where Peter went, but we know he's in Rome at this time because he says, I'm here in Babylon, and that was code for Rome.
Yeah.
And so he's writing from Rome. That's across a couple little seas, to where Asia Minor is. That's modern-day Turkey. And it's where all these churches are scattered. It's a circular letter, like a mail route, so that you take it to one, then to another, then to another.
The Pony Express or something it's called.
Right? That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nero is on the throne in Rome. He's the emperor. He has been for a few years. Persecution has started. It's not ramped up fully yet, but it has definitely started. These are mostly non-Jewish Christians, but yet Peter still writes to them with very Jewish terms, like, you're my chosen people, like the Old Testament would say about Israel. And so he's including them in the church and the chosen people of God. These are his representatives on earth. So those are a few other just historical background.
Nero was
a dude,
bad
man.
Dude. Mm. He was crazy. I think there's
one fire to Rome, man.
Yeah, I think
watch it burn.
It's Suetonius or Tacitus that tells that story. He set the fire, watched it burn, and then blamed the Christians.
Yep.
So
I think he played the violin while doing it.
Played his fiddle. Yep. Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a fiddler on the roof or something like that.
Well, I think it was Nero as well. I can't remember if it was him or the guy right after him. Do you remember who was after Nero? Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, Luke's gonna look it up. Who was emperor after Nero? Domitian.
No, Domitian would have been later, because Domitian was after like his older brother Titus. Domitian is the emperor, I think, whenever John writes first.
So okay, so maybe it's Domitian I'm thinking of, but it was either Nero or Domitian. Like, they would take Christian women who had like this really long hair, and they would tie them to a stake mm-hmm. and soak their hair in oil, and then light them on fire to light their dinner parties. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're just talking like,
it's not a very good smell to have it.
Well,
there.
I know, yeah. But just like just the crazy, just depths of depravity whenever it came to that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So you've got like a Roman background. You've got like a big list of really, really quick things that happened after Nero. So after Nero was Galba, and he was for like a year, and then Otho, which was for less than a year, and then Aulus Vatilius, which was less than a year, and then Vespasian. Mm-hmm. And Vespasian was father to Titus and Domitian.
Okay.
Titus was older, so when Vespasian was out, Titus got the throne, but he was really there for only 2 years, and then Domitian gets it. And I actually think, based on what Suetonius and Tacitus wrote, I wrote a big paper about this whenever I was doing First John in college. I think that Domitian was responsible for Titus's death.
And he was sick in bed and
poisonous and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And so this is a quick, all that aside, but whenever, you know, whenever John is writing in First John about like anyone who hates his brother is a murderer and all that sort of stuff, there could be some shade being thrown at the political landscape of the day in the emperor. So,
well, it wasn't just Rome. I mean, Herod did that too.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that. Yeah. Ancient history is like,
it's so much fun.
We think our politics today are wild.
Yeah.
What makes you wonder is like,
you say that phrase, you think our politics today are wild. There is literally nothing new under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that
that's what I'm saying,
exactly the same that's happened in every other empire.
Yeah. So it's like, is that stuff still happening? And the answer is probably yes.
Right.
Yeah. And this is not the direction this conversation's going, but even stuff like,
do we want to talk about the election coming up? Or is that what you're saying?
No.
Oh.
Just like some of the sexual ethics and things that are now in our culture. And a lot of people will be like, this is totally new, unprecedented, and to a certain extent, yes, because of internet and things like that. But you have some crazy stuff in ancient Rome.
They were perverts, man.
Yeah.
Well, Nero himself
was a pervert.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So there's all sorts of stuff like this. But, you know, whenever you this is really part of the conversation, you know, anyways, because back in the context of what these Christians in, the early 60s are dealing with, they are a belief system that goes against the grain of culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true for us today, is we are a belief, like we hold beliefs that go against the grain of the culture. And that often puts us in a position to be ostracized or to be canceled or to be thought of as moralistic, don't really care about other people, judgmental towards others. And that's the easiest way to get written off by society these days. And so, and none of that's true, but this is what these Christians are dealing with. They're being persecuted because they have a belief that goes against the grain of the culture.
Correct. Yeah. I was reading an article just yesterday, last night on it was somebody just remembering Tim Keller and his ministry in New York. And they referenced this idea that basically there's been three worlds of evangelicalism in America. Okay, so prior to 1994, they would call it the positive world,
okay,
where Christian is a good thing, it's a positive force, people celebrate it in the culture, okay, whether you're Christian or not. Then the second phase was from, he marks it from 94 to 2014, when he called it the neutral world, where there was enough secularism in the world for Christianity to kind of lose its place of privilege, but it wasn't disfavored.
That is literally my childhood.
Yeah.
94 to 2014.
Yeah,
I was born in 96 and I graduated high school.
So you lived in the neutral world. You were brought up in the neutral world.
Yeah. And Adam, I was definitely the favorable world, and I was mostly that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the final stage, he says, is the negative world. Which kicked off about 2015 or so. And he's like, that's where we find ourselves today. So we literally are, according to this, entering into this phase that is going to be hopefully not a dead ringer for what the Christians in the first century were experiencing, because that was pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
But we have entered into a phase to where we are more like that than what we were 30 years ago.
Yeah, and really what you could say is – it is sort of unprecedented, because before 1994 really went all the way back to the founding of the nation, where things were pretty favorable. And that way you're talking like 200 years.
Correct.
So we had 200 years of favor and then 20 years of indifference.
Neutrality.
And now it's like, it's a quick turnaround when you think about the context of everything.
Yeah. So what is that? So this is kind of a question. When you think about that shift, what makes you nervous? But even more so, what might make you hopeful? Looking at what might come, and sure, we might be a little bit more ostracized and there might be some suffering coming our way, which is the point of this series. Mm-hmm. What makes you, maybe a little bit nervous, but what fills you with hope for the church?
Well, I think that's where you can actually go straight to this text, is in all these things we greatly rejoice, that for a little while you may have to suffer, had to or have to suffer grief and all kinds of trials, but those are going to prove the genuineness of your faith. So here's what gives me hope, is that if we are moving into a phase to where it is not like this just culturally accepted thing to be a Christian, that means that the people who are going to be in churches are people who really want to be all in.
Mm-hmm.
They're not there because, hey, this will be good for my business. You know, they're not there because it's like, hey, this will be good connections, you know, those things. It's going to be, I want to follow Jesus. And so the churches that we have, and I'm not just talking Corinth, I'm talking all around.
Yeah.
Should include people who are more all in. And whenever the church is all in, I think that the ripple effect is what changes. And so I actually think that going through a season of suffering would actually benefit the churches in general, but also it would benefit our culture.
Yeah, and I agree 100%.
Even world history and current history, you look at where the church worldwide is exploding.
Mm-hmm.
It's where people in, like, are being persecuted. Central America, South America, Asia, where persecution is happening, where it's not really, mm-hmm. there's not a whole lot of, you know, riches and prosperity. It's
right.
truly like, we have the gospel, we have God, this is our riches.
And I think too, and so this is anecdotal from our experience here at Corinth, but it's also anecdotal from stories I hear from other churches and pastors, is I think God is up to something.
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, he's always up to something, but but I feel like we are on the verge of an awakening mm-hmm. in our nation, because you hear, like, just listen to our baptism stories. I mean, it's mm-hmm. crazy to hear. It's like, yeah, I saw this sign, I saw a billboard, I saw this, I saw this. It's like God was doing this, and
mm-hmm.
and I feel like, you know, in these days that God is doing some very remarkable things to get people's attention.
Yeah.
And I think that now, maybe more than ever, well, not more than ever, but more than recently, how about that? Let's just say it that way. People are open and are being receptive to what God is trying to do in their lives.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think, across the board generationally too.
Yes.
And so it's really, really cool. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, whenever I think about suffering, you know, I don't want to be, and sound at risk as like masochistic,
correct?
Masochisty or whatever, however you would say that.
Masochisty,
sadist.
But like, there's a part of me that is like, okay, like, this is going to be good, and it's because of what we've seen mm-hmm. in church history and in other places of the world. It's like, I think one of the reasons that the church in America has become so easy over the last 220 years. Is because it was just the thing. Like, you know, there, it wasn't hard to be a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And usually whenever it's not hard to be a Christian, there's a little bit of authenticity that's lacking, and, mm-hmm. You know, some stagnancy can result. And you see that too. And to go back to Rome, you see that in the Roman Empire, because you've got emperor after emperor after emperor after emperor who's like, we're coming after these bad Christians. And then Constantine has his thing.
Mm-hmm.
He all of a sudden makes Christianity okay. Yeah. They start building churches and all that sort of stuff, which is cool. But then at a certain point, it actually became a little bit stagnant and unauthentic.
Some people
right?
say so, that Constantine was the worst thing to happen at the church. some
right.
people say that.
You know, some people have said that. And so it's like you look at what might be coming our way, and it's like, okay, this could potentially be a really good thing, because the people who are going to be in churches are going to be all in with real, authentic Christianity, and then mm-hmm. that's going to spread. And so I'm, you know, again, don't want to sound like a masochist, but I'm a little bit excited about where the church is in culture right now, because I think it's going to be good for us.
Yeah, because whenever I do think whenever everybody is all in, it just makes such a huge difference. Like I remember Ben Merrill, you know, who just an amazing preacher, pastor, kind of guy. And this is an offshoot of this, but he would say, everybody talks about how they want to attend a small, friendly, evangelistic church. And he says, I have to tell them those don't exist. Because if a church is small, friendly, and evangelistic, it will soon be large, friendly, and evangelistic.
Yeah.
You know. And so the result of Christians coming together, living out what Jesus has called us to, and becoming the people he's called us to be, it is something that spreads like wildfire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
let's get it. Yeah. Adam, why don't you jump in, and you read some of it, but let's just read it and get it in front of us again. And then we'll talk a little bit more about the text before we move into application. Josh, you were in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 through 9. This is the doxology that you talked about, the starting point of praise in the midst of suffering. Adam, could you read that text for us? And then Josh, once he's done, why don't you just start talking to us a little bit about the text and your study, both the things that you maybe mentioned in the sermon and maybe some of the things that hit the cutting room floor.
Yeah, I think I'm starting in verse 3. So praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus from the dead, and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. This inheritance is kept in heaven for you, who through faith are shielded by God's power until the coming of salvation that is ready to be revealed in the last time. In all this, you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. These have come so that the proven genuineness of your faith, greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined by fire, may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus is revealed. Though you have not seen him, you love him, and even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy, for you are receiving the end result of your faith, the salvation of your souls.
Boom. Josh, talk to us a little bit.
So there's tons of fun stuff. One thing, I love it when Paul does this a few times too, but Peter here, all these verses and actually even more of them are one sentence in Greek, which is like he just starts talking and can't stop about God's goodness. Like it's just one long sentence. But that's just kind of a fun thing. Throughout the book of 1 Peter, this didn't make it in, I don't think, but there's 30 Old Testament allusions and 25 gospel references. And so when you talk about looking back, Peter does this. He looks back at what God has done in the Old Testament and the New Testament through Jesus. And I think that could be helpful for us as well. One little fun thing, what does it say? All kinds of trials. It's a kind of a fun word. It's variegated. It's some sort of fancy word, but basically it means many colored. So I imagine holding up a diamond. Like if you hold up a diamond and turn it, every single slight turn, it reflects and refracts the light in a different way.
Sure.
And that's what your sufferings are. Every single one of them, as you turn them up to the light, it's doing something in your life. And then finally, just that word shielded in verse 5, it's a military word. Like God is very strongly guarding your faith in heaven. Your eternal security is not based upon your perfection and you perfectly following. It's God guarding it. It's Jesus. It's secure in him. So those are a few things that maybe didn't quite make it in, but they were just fun. So
yeah, love it. Thanks for sharing. I am just... Again, like I said, one of the things that jumps out is just, it's so incredible to me that Peter, in the midst of a culture experiencing persecution, the church he's writing to experiencing persecution, the way he starts the letter, praise, yeah. Praise, praise, praise.
And this is, so I didn't say this, but Adam shared this with me just last hour, something he got reading a Tim Keller thing. Imagine that, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Bingo card.
Bingo.
But so a really interesting connection is that verse 7 when it says, these persecutions and such are going to result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. Our natural instinct is we will praise Jesus and give him glory and give him honor. But the way the grammar is written is it's actually reversed. So when Jesus is revealed, he will give praise and glory and honor to his saints who have stood the test. Well done, my good and faithful servant. It's just a really, really humbling image to imagine.
Yeah, we get everything from God that he is going to give. Here's the way to say it. God is going to give us everything Jesus deserves.
Yes.
And so if you stand firm, then you end up getting praise, glory, and honor because it's like, mm-hmm. Hey, these guys made it to the end. And if I remember right, I couldn't do book and – well, I can do book, but I can't do chapter verse. But isn't that part of what's going on in the in Revelation? Whenever those who have been martyred for their faith, isn't there some praise given to them as well? Am I making
there
that?
Is yeah. Yeah
there is
mm-hmm. yeah
Yeah. And that's even, you know, that's an image that's run throughout the entire New Testament. Galatians chapter 4 talks about how if we are adopted as God's sons, then we also are heirs with Christ, which, you know, kind of talks about how we're going to, a part of the inheritance that Jesus deserves is given to us.
Yeah.
And so this is a narrative that is lines up with scripture.
The flip of the coin is that Jesus took everything that we deserve. So,
yes.
And that's 2 Corinthians 5,
right.
21. Mm-hmm. And so, because he took everything that we deserve, we get everything that he deserves, which is just.
That is
remarkable.
Yeah. It's undescribable. Yeah. God's great love for us. Josh, one of the lines you said, Peter says to his churches, when the fires of faith come, here's where you should look. You should look to Jesus. You should look to salvation. You should remember what God has actually done for you. Because, and really, like, it's not a question of if the fires of faith come, it's a question of when. And mm-hmm. so, you know, talk through suffering a little bit. God's people aren't exempt from it. You know, just because we, you know, align ourselves with the will of the good and almighty creator does not mean that he magically removes suffering from our lives, because he actually oftentimes uses it as a tool to sharpen mm-hmm. us and to refine us. So just a couple questions about suffering before we kind of move into application, and we can hit these real quick. Just how does the Bible talk through suffering? What might be some dangerous ways that faith people have thought about it or can think about it? And what are some proper and helpful ways to start thinking about suffering?
Yeah, well, so later in 1 Peter, I think it's 4:12, it actually says, why are you surprised when these fiery trials come your way? Like, you should expect them, and God mm-hmm. uses them.
Yeah.
I also think suffering, we talked a little bit about this last night in our apologetics class, just how can God be so good if the world is so bad? And there's right. many, many reasons. One of them, though, is God loves us so much that he suffered too, and he entered the world to put a stop to suffering. And so the great Christian narrative is not that we would not suffer here on earth, but that suffering would eventually be put to death once and for all. And Jesus died to do that. So
Philippians 2. Love that. Adam, what are some thoughts? Maybe what are some proper ways to think about suffering as a faith person in maybe comparison to some of the ways that we have thought about it or could be tempted to think about it?
Yeah, I go back to the idea that of redemptive suffering as well. That so often people struggle with believing in God because suffering does happen. And it's just the idea of, you know what, we've all gone through painful things that we came out on the other side better. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of suffering to me really isn't an apologetic against God. It's more of like, it's an apologetic for God.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. he's able to take those things and use them for our good.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of First Peter's message is just like, hey, you are going to go through suffering. Mm-hmm. Don't be surprised whenever you experience the fiery trials.
Yeah.
But just remember that they're for your good.
Yeah.
Well, so one thing in thinking of, you know, apologetics and how to, you know, argue for God's existence. If you believe, let me say this right. If you believe that God can't exist, but you can't stop believing that suffering and bad exist because they do and you experience them, but you don't believe God exists, that doesn't actually change your suffering one bit. And in fact, makes it worse because you have no answer for it.
Right.
No answer for it.
Yeah. And well, this is one of the
no way to deal with it.
This is one of the ways that I think we can get to praise first in the midst of suffering, because, you know, the apologetic, probably the common question is in regards to like proof of God's existence is that the agnostic or the atheist would say, the existence of suffering and evil and bad in the world disproves the existence of God. But that's mm-hmm. it's quite the opposite. Mm-hmm. The existence of evil and suffering and bad in the world proves the existence of a good creator. Because if there's not good not a good creator God, then by what definition do we know that something is evil or mm-hmm. bad, or, you know, how do we even know to call suffering suffering if not for a good in the world?
So. C.S. Lewis said, how can I call a line crooked unless I know what straight is?
Correct.
Yeah. So how can I even name it suffering unless there's an ultimate good?
Yeah. Henry Nouwen talks about, this is in the same vein, he said that, you know, every time we make the decision to love someone, you know, we open ourselves up to suffering, because mm-hmm. the ones that we love most not only cause us great joy, but also great pain.
Yeah.
But, and then he says, if we want to avoid the suffering of leaving, we'll never experience the joy of loving.
Yeah.
And so there is benefit in pain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you are going to suffer, maybe more so in the next 20, 25 years in this culture than in years past. So when you do, look to praise as your starting point. Josh, you gave great advice for what this might look like. Look up, look back, look forward. So let's talk through a little bit of, about these practically. How can we praise in the midst of suffering? Number one, look up. Why should we do that? What does it look like? And then how does this play out for you?
Yeah, to me, I told that story about a grease fire. Have y'all ever had a grease fire?
No.
I have not had a grease fire.
It's like super scary.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Because
you don't really feel like you can do anything about it.
Well, I didn't have that blanket. Now I got the kitchen blanket you just throw on top of it. But yeah, it's like, I knew I shouldn't throw water on it or things, right. But you just feel hopeless and helpless. And the point I was making was you're looking at the problem going, that problem is getting so big and it's out of my control, instead of looking to the solution. And so I think that's where we look is so important. And so we look up, to me, what I was thinking of is that line I said, you know, Jesus is alive. And, I remember hearing, Pete Scazzaro talking about this years ago. He was on the phone with, I believe it was a friend who was a church planter, and everything was just going wrong. Like the church was failing. His wife was leaving him, like all this stuff. And Pete, not in a trite sort of way, but he was just on the phone and he said, Jesus is alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is our ground, you know, our grounding force. So not only is Jesus alive, but I think in that we look up to him and see, you know, what I already said earlier, just Jesus suffered too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jesus was earlier in the summer, we did Daniel in the lion's den, and then the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Rakshak and Benny in the fire. And Jesus was in the fire with them too. Like Jesus suffers and he's with us in it as a brother. So that's kind of the idea there. What does it look like? I think just reminding yourself on a daily basis who Jesus is and what he has done. And so that's why the challenge was kind of a little business card handout everybody got that said, fix your eyes. And then it had on the back the verse of 1 Peter 1:3 just says, praise be to God. You know, we have a living hope. Mm-hmm. We have a living hope because we have a living Savior. Jesus is alive.
Mm-hmm.
Let's remind ourselves of that every day. So we're going to read it. We're going to sing it. We're going to say it. We're going to tell each other it, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I love that. Adam, do you have anything to add here?
No, I would just take the free space on the bingo card and say this is why rhythms are so key and important.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking up and looking back, and we have thrown out lines before. Adam, you've been saying this like really for 4 or 5 years, because I remember one of my first times hearing you speak at all was one of these lines. And it was just the greatest predictor of future performance is past performance. So mm-hmm. we like to look back at God's faithfulness in the midst of suffering to then look forward, which we'll get to. But look back is where you went there, Josh. Why should we? What does it look like? And how does it play out for you once again?
I think you already hit it. Just we see what God has done in history. And so we have a very limited view. I am 38 years old, and in that life, I've experienced a lot more than some of my younger brothers or sisters. But as the proverbs say, you know, gray hair is the crown of splendor. There's people with a lot more splendor than me, and they have seen God's.
I've got it over here.
That is the nicest way to call somebody old.
Yes. They I did that in the sermon. I hope it was fun.
Yeah.
So. There's other people, though, you know, you get to sit with people and they've seen the ups and downs of culture and they don't get worried or things like that. It's looked like for me, like when our family had a miscarriage that turned into an adoption, or I've seen other people that have just, they've gone through a prodigal child that, you know, didn't know when they were going to come and they made it back, or a death, heaven forbid, of a child, you know, didn't know why God would ever allow that, but they're you know, has been praise. People come to faith because of all those situations. And so we have this very limited view. And so when we look back, we see God's faithfulness, and then we're, you know, confident more for the future. So
love that. And then look forward. And I think before you look forward, you do need to look back, because it'll give you the perspective that you need. What is looking forward like? What does looking forward look like? There you go.
The line from yesterday was, what we hope for tomorrow is what we live for today. So this kind of comes back to the rhythms. It's, what are we actually excited for? And in life, we have lots of things we're excited for. You know, my daughter Rosalie she's been asking for months, when's my birthday? When's my birthday? She can't wait to turn 7, you know, October 10th. She'll turn 7. And so she's excited about that. Maybe we're going on a vacation, or our anniversary is coming up, or football season's here. And that means what we're looking forward to tomorrow, we kind of talk about and plan for today. And so if we put in our minds constantly the hope that we have, then we're going to live for that today. One thing specifically that I did this last week was actually in the sermon prep one day, I just took a pause and turned on that Phil Wickham song, the Hymn of Heaven. Mm-hmm. And just imagining what that day is going to be like, gathered with saints of old. You think, man, Moses, David, Joshua, like Elijah, all these Old Testament heroes, and yet they might be more excited to see us because we have the Holy Spirit, and they never did, which is just wild too. But really, the hero of the day is when we see Jesus's face, and it's just when we slow down enough to actually think about that, that can stop us in our tracks. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I love it. Look up, look back, look forward, and you know, to beat a dead horse over and over again. Adam's already brought it up. But this is rhythms.
Yeah. Yeah,
this is what this means. Mm-hmm. You will handle. I don't know if handle is the right word. You will
endure.
Endure. Yep. There you go. Endure suffering, better and more in a God honoring way whenever your rhythms are in place. So get those in place now. When things are good, so that whenever suffering does come, you've already got the habits and the things in place. So yeah, love that.
Two quick thoughts on that. So specifically on the one that you just mentioned, I think we've mentioned the book on the podcast before, but Samuel Chan's Leadership Pain. Mm-hmm. Yep. Just talks about, you will never grow past your threshold of pain. That's as far as you're going to go. And so if you want to increase your capacity, you have to increase your ability to endure pain. And I think that that's a part of this here. If you want to increase your capacity to love more, to be a better husband, parent, grandparent, those things, you're going to have to increase your capacity to endure pain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that's part of why pain is a blessing. But the other thing too, Josh, I was thinking about as you were talking about, you know, what we're looking forward to is, like, I was just drawn back to verse 8 and 9, because what Peter is saying is, like, right now you, even though you haven't seen him, you love him. Mm-hmm. Even though you don't see him right now, you believe in him, and you're filled with this incredible joy. And so the thing that we look forward to is, we will see him. Mm-hmm. And so our faith will become sight. And so that is the ultimate living hope, that the one that we have prayed to, that we have sung to, that we have cried to, that we have celebrated, you know, expressed joy to, that we've never seen, we've never been able to embrace him physically. Mm-hmm. There is coming a day when all that will come true.
Yeah.
And that is the living hope that we have. Mm-hmm. And that is what allows you to endure suffering. You don't endure suffering because you think, well, things are just going to get better in a few months. The only way to really be able to endure is to feel like there's something that is going to be eternal, mm-hmm. that is going to hold us for all of eternity. So
yeah,
love it.
Bottom line, hope is not what your heart feels, but where your eyes are fixed. And so the challenge from yesterday was to fix your eyes. Josh, talk to us a little bit about this challenge, and let's maybe give some practical ways for our people to do this.
Yeah, that's just fix your eyes. It's where your eyes are fixed.
Go to the
eye doctor. Yeah,
what's the word? Optometrist. Ophthalmologist,
I think. Optometrist.
Optometrist,
right?
Optometrist, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Ventriloquist.
Mm-hmm. yeah, swinging all the way back to the beginning, the grease fire. I was looking at the problem, and I was freaking out because I was looking at the problem. If I would have had my eyes fixed on a solution, then it would have been a whole lot more calm. And so I think fixing our eyes on what is true that we know, the scriptures, and so that little business card could be helpful to maybe just put it up. We do this from time to time. It's not anything new, but you could put it on your mirror, put it on your dash, put it on your Bible, put it as a bookmark. Something we've done before is the whole song challenge, like maybe find a song that helps you focus your day. Just something, a rhythm every single day where you're saying, I'm not going to be victim to my feelings. I'm going to tell my body and my mind and my heart, like, this is where we're going. So That's the idea.
Yeah. I think it's a Martin Lloyd-Jones, the old preacher, says chief cause of spiritual depression is when a man is listening to himself instead of talking to himself.
Mm, yeah.
And so fixing your eyes, part of that is it's talking to yourself and saying, this is who Jesus is. This is what he's called me to. Mm-hmm. And I will receive a reward.
Yeah. It's a pretty biblical image as well. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, Colossians chapter 3.
Fix your eyes on Jesus, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You think about all of the times that Israel had got it wrong. The prophets say, you have eyes, but you don't use them. You're blind. Mm-hmm. You're not looking where you're supposed to look. You've got like Simeon, whenever he literally sees Jesus, and then all of a sudden he knows what's coming, deliverance for all of the nations. And so it's a really biblical image as well. Like whenever you fix your eyes on Jesus, you're going to endure suffering a whole lot better. And so we'd encourage you to do that this week. Fix your eyes on Jesus. Good stuff today, guys.
Yeah.
We talked about suffering. So that was fun.
Hopefully it was enjoyable.
So yeah. For something fun at the end, are we going to suffer? Are we going to do Chinese water torture?
No.
Okay, good.
I should do wall squats. Who can go longer?
Ooh.
Who could go longer?
It wouldn't be me, I don't think.
What's the longest wall squat you've ever done?
I don't know.
I just remember in basketball, so Coach Armstrong had two listening positions. So if we weren't listening and paying attention to what he said, so one position was the push-up position. So it's essentially a plank, but it wasn't
right.
Plank. Uh-huh. It was actually lowered.
So were your arms bent?
Yes.
Yep. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was listening position number one. Listening position number two was wall squats.
You got to get those legs to 90 degrees.
Yeah.
It is not a squat unless you're...
And so he would get us up against the wall, and then he would just start on a lecture. He'd like, fellas.
Yeah.
I just don't know sometimes about y'all.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think there was one basketball practice that we were on the wall for probably a total of 9 minutes. And we were all dying because... We lost a game because of our free throw shooting.
Mm.
And so next day in practice, guess what we're doing? Free throws. And for every one that we miss, there's like, 10 seconds of wall sits that we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it accumulates to go, and we all missed like all of our free throws. And so the time was already like up to 4.5 or 5 minutes. But then coach would add like 20 seconds anytime someone was out of position.
Oh, yeah.
And so there was a specific teammate of mine that was slacking off. And
Call him out.
You know, he would never be able to find this podcast, I don't think. But he wouldn't have his legs at 90 degrees. His mm-hmm. arms wouldn't be up. His back would be arched over and bent over. And so literally there was a time there for a second where he was like, okay, 20 more seconds. All right, he still hasn't fixed himself. 20 more seconds.
Yep.
All right, well, he's still 20 more seconds. We were so mad at him. That was the longest wall sits we ever done because of that. So, oh, well, all sin is communal, right? So yep. We're going to pay the consequences for the other actions. Okay, we're gonna play a game called Super Fight today.
This morning?
This moment in time.
Right now.
This game is a fun game where you guys are going to draw a character card. And a couple of attribute cards to create a...
So like Pokemon or...
Yeah, kind of. you'll kind of see. I'll give you an example. So the white cards are the character cards. So if I drew, this character card, okay, my character is 101 Dalmatians.
Okay.
So then I would draw two attribute cards, which these are the black cards right here.
Attribute or attribute?
Attribute.
Whatever it is. characteristic cards.
Tribute is a verb. Attribute is the adjective.
So here's what my character is now, okay. Right? So I am 101 Dalmatians that have majestic flaming antlers growing out of head. Uh-huh. So 202 antlers, and armed with catarrings.
I don't know what that is.
It's like either. I don't know if Japanese is the right word, but it's kind of like a throwing star or a sharp tool of some kind, I think.
I'll look it up.
You look it up. But that would be my character, right? So you guys are going to draw your characters, and then you are going to debate about which of your characters would win in a fight.
Oh, wow.
And then not only will I decide who won, but you as the audience will need to comment on our show notes or whatever, or just text us and let us know, hey, who do you think won this argument? So
yeah, it looks like it's
Josh. Josh has drawn his character.
It's like more like a batarang. So
a batarang
from Batman.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I gotcha. So
one white card, one white,
which is like the noun, the character, and then the adjectives, the attributes, the attribute cards. Two of those.
The attribute cards.
Yeah. So who wants to reveal their stuff first?
So am I supposed to show these?
Yeah. So you let us know. You'll each know who each other is, and then we'll give you guys some time to debate who wins in a fight.
Okay. So I have a witch.
Okay.
Who is agoraphobic.
Okay.
Scared of crowds, right?
Well, yeah. Can't go outside of their apartment or something.
Agora, yeah.
If you're a witch, agora,
you're afraid of people.
Yeah.
Afraid to go in crowds.
And they can't see. So it's a blind witch who's agoraphobic.
Wow, that's not very good characteristics that you got there. So
I'm going to have to explain why they would win in a fight?
Against Josh's character.
Okay. How long of the debate is the debate?
I don't know. You guys can each have a minute or something.
Okay.
Well, I am a supermodel that controls the weather, but I'm a narcoleptic.
Mm.
A narcoleptic supermodel.
Sleeps, right?
Yeah, just fall asleep at the drop of the hat.
Yeah.
This is interesting. I've never seen.
But so here's the deal. I'm not afraid to go out, and I can control the weather, so it's always sunny, so I'm not going to fall asleep very easily.
So you're giving your debate right now?
Yeah, he's starting his debate. He's jumping in. Yep. Right.
When I want to attack the witch, it will be very sunny, and I can control the weather and make it so hot that she needs to come outside and scared of crowds, and then at the snap of a finger, I will switch the weather to a giant flood and flash flood her to death.
Well, first of all, you control the weather, not the AC. So she has an HVAC.
Well, I can also control the weather that will take out the power.
Yeah, it's fine. She's inside. She doesn't care how hot it is. And she's a witch. They're cold-blooded. And she can't see, so she wouldn't know that a storm's coming or anything like that. And so she's going to be fine. She's not going to be scared. You can't scare her. So that's the biggest thing about a storm is it invokes fear. And she can't see it, so she's not going to be afraid of it.
She can't see, but she can feel. So I can also start an earthquake that would swallow her alive.
She's fine. She's also a witch, so she's got a broom. And so she's just going to hover above it. And she's got the reverse spell. So anything that you throw at her, it's like, it's rubber. And she's rubber and you're glue. And so it's just going to bounce off her.
What you don't know is I'm also on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and every other social media. I'm an influencer and I have thousands and millions of followers. And I've convinced them to go to the house of the witch.
She doesn't care. She
sacrificed themselves for my beauty.
She can't see. She doesn't care. And she ain't coming to the door anyway.
They'll bang the door in.
No. She's a witch, so it's
basically
already...
I control the weather. I'm basically Zeus, the master of all the gods.
Oh, no.
Lightning bolts, fire.
You're a supermodel, so you're going to get something wrong. So
has that been a minute yet?
I don't know. Josh, you've got 10 more seconds, and then Adam, you've got 10 more seconds after him. Okay. Make a final thought.
Okay, do we know what country we're in? Because...
No.
I'm sending the biggest tsunami wave that cannot be escaped by a witch's broom.
We're in Missouri, landlocked. Yeah. Sorry.
We're in Missouri? Okay, so I'll get you my pretty and send the tornado.
Yeah, she's going to hover, man. She's going to be fine on that side. So, but coming after you, so even though she can't see, she's still a witch, and so she's going to have like those witch eyes that can see that can't see. Okay, so she can be blind but still see because she's evil. And even though she's agoraphobic and she's not going to be able to leave, the good thing is spells don't have, you don't have to be present to cast a spell. And so she's going to be able to cast the spell from wherever she is.
This is longer than 10 seconds. But
and okay. So, but that's why it's going to be to her advantage to be able to defeat a weather-controlling narcoleptic.
Smoking hot model.
But narcoleptic. See, that's the other thing you left out. You never even mentioned the fact that while your supermodel is trying to control the weather, she's going to fall asleep. And so it's not even going to get completed. And so... my witch can do the pixie dust, what were the flowers in Wizard of Oz that caused them all to fall asleep? But anyway, she can cause you to fall asleep even quicker, and it's
drought. Flowers can't grow.
It's gonna be game over, man.
Yeah. All right, there you go. I don't know who won. I don't think that matters.
And Gandalf is a wizard witch. And
I personally am going to give it to Adam solely based on characters, because witch is going to beat supermodel.
Oh, yeah.
A million times.
Absolutely.
Out of a million.
Especially
times.
An
archetype. I think Josh agrees that there. So the witches are crazy, man. Like the Star Wars witches, the whole, I don't remember what they're called.
Star Wars witches.
They're a witch. There's like a, you know, witch people in Star Wars, and they are powerful. Like they
have you crazy. Ever heard of the board game Trial by Trolley?
Yes.
It's essentially this, yeah. But you have to decide who dies, and you have to make an argument on who would die.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you have like a, you know, a Girl Scout troop versus, you know, just these innocent people, and you have to decide. It's like the old trolley problem question.
Yeah, like
you had to divert the track one side or the other. Yeah. Who are you going to kill? Yeah.
I would derail the train entirely and save everybody.
That's exactly right.
All right.
I'm Superman.
That's right. Cool. Hey, well, thank you for humoring me and arguing about something that doesn't matter at all. And thank
you. It matters.
It matters because we're competitive. Thank you to all of you who have tuned in to listen. Tonight is a Thursday night, and it's the start of the football season. Florida plays, I don't remember, but for all of you Georgia fans, I wish you that Florida lose is tonight, so that everything gets off to a great start.
Oh, Utah.
Florida and Utah. That could be a good game.
Utah's actually right.
Yeah.
Florida is not.
Yeah, there you go. Ha ha. All right, cool. Well, we will be back with Faith Under Fire Part 2 next Sunday. We'd love to see you in person for that. And then, of course, back in the cars and treadmills and showers or wherever it is that you listen next Monday morning. So we hope you have a good week. We love you. Peace. Thank you.